Right.
Makes me want to tap into the rage tree. Rolling!
This has got to be on heavy rotation on Wolf's favorite playlist, doesn't it?
I would think so.
And it's also the secondary theme song of our next guest from ArizonaSports.com, the one and only.
Look at you, Nolan Olson. Look at you hit that pose there. You did that like a pro, Casey Kasem.
What do you mean like a pro?
That was. Man, that was good.
I am a pro.
Man, that was good.
Kellen Olson joins us on the Coulter Automotive Group sports line. Hi, Kellen.
It's brought the energy. I'm happy to be here. Hello.
You feeling pumped?
Yeah.
Just let out a primal scream. Do it, Kellen.
No, thank you.
All right, speaking of aggressiveness and energy, primal screams, all of it, man, what a difference a couple weeks makes for DeAndre Ayton, huh?
Right. I think that fans can look at the three games prior to Saturday and see a change in him, and I totally agree. But what we even saw on Saturday, I highlighted two of his turnovers, which were traveling calls because he was so antsy off the dribble and really just showed no hesitation at all in attacking Nikola Jokic, who he's had his way with now for two straight seasons, which is impressive in its own right. But just to see him, I wouldn't say when he was playing very like super aggressive in the past couple of games or even last year that I saw a new light of confidence in him. But in that game on Saturday, he looked like a guy who truly believed, like, I'm the best player on this floor and no one can stop me. And the box score might not have reflected that. I believe he only had 17 points and 13 rebounds, and then Jokic was the guy with the 2020 game. But I thought arguably he was the best guy on the court in that game. He was outstanding defensively on Jokic. I think that he played even a level higher than he ever has defensively in that matchup. And the story of that game should have been him, because if you remember the last two possessions for Denver, Nikola Jokic had that baseline jumper that he always takes with a really high arc that always goes in. It was an air ball, and then Jamal Murray's what should have been a travel call instead of a game-tying three-point shot. That was such an incredibly difficult shot because of DeAndre Ayton's defense on him. Ayton should have been the story in that game. Unfortunately, he wasn't, just because it went to double overtime, and it was such a tough loss with a lot of shenanigans involving the referees. But, man, he's just taking it up another level right now, and I think something Dan's talked about a lot on the show in the past couple of weeks has just been how exciting that is.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, I'm curious from your vantage point, what has allowed DeAndre Ayton to sustain what he's done in terms of his aggressiveness, his demeanor? Is it sort of the feedback he's getting? Is it the rise he's getting out of teammates? What do you think might be different this time around?
Well, I think it comes down to a couple of different things. I think that, first of all, I think that Chris Paul has to take some of the responsibility here in terms of claiming what has happened, because I think you look at time after time with DeAndre and running these pick and rolls with him, I think that the timing is coming down a little bit, and I think that that's helping. Just knowing that Chris Paul is going to be able to find him in his spots is going to help him. And I think that that's something that Paul and Booker have talked about, just how much they've been on him this year. And I think Paul has been the one especially to say, like, that's not an easy thing to have all these voices in your ear consistently, but he's handling it right now and handling it well. I don't really know beyond that, Dan, if I'm being honest, because if we knew the answer to that already, it would be an easier discussion to have about him. I'm really curious to just sort of see how he plays over the next 2 to 3 weeks, because I think that if they get this guy or some version of this guy that's ultra-aggressive 6 out of 8 games out of 10, when you look across the schedule as opposed to just 1 or 2 or 3, they're just a completely different team. And I think that they can really challenge any team when he's playing like this. That's really how much he matters when he's playing at that level. Like I said, I can't really remember that many games over the course of his career, really not one, where I thought that he was far and away the best player on the floor, but I thought he was on Saturday, and that's just such a huge deal, and in my opinion, really the biggest on-court development the Suns have seen in the past really year or two.
Kellen Olson from ArizonaSports.com, our guest here on Bickley and Murata. On the Chris Paul front, and yes, I think what he's done from a tutelage standpoint, from a leadership standpoint, has been very noticeable on the floor. But going back to what we saw on Friday and Saturday, the difference in Chris Paul's game first half to second half was stark both nights. I mean, 26 assists in both games in the first half and then two in the second half. Saturday especially was just a total offensive slog. What do you make of that? And then, you know, zooming out from that, Kellen, Chris Paul's basketball effect on the product so far and what you've seen in his time with the Suns.
The second half is particularly interesting, and I think I'm going to start there because the Suns are, right now, I believe they're either the slowest team in the league when it comes to pace or one of the bottom three. And that's just a byproduct of having Chris Paul as your point guard. That is going to come with time. Mm-hmm. But the Suns do not want to be playing that slow, especially in the 0.5 system. And you look at where they're struggling specifically right now. I have a piece on ArizonaSports.com kind of going through some of the concerns that fans might have right now, and it's specifically looking at someone like Chris Paul and how the struggles have gone in crunch time and how I think they're going to get better. But if you look at where the team has not been good or average, a couple of stats that stand out are points in transition, points off turnovers, and then points in the paint. Now, points in the paint is somewhere where you might not think of Chris Paul coming up right away, but he just doesn't really shoot at the rim. He barely shoots there at all, in fact. So, mm-hmm. So that's something that's going to slow down a team when you have a point guard like that who's not relentlessly attacking the basket to score, because he's not really finishing around the rim that much, and I'm not saying that's a negative about him or a negative for the team. It's just the reality of his game. So you need other guys to be attacking around the basket, more specifically DeAndre Ayton, which I think is going to help a lot. But that changes the dynamic of a team a little bit. In terms of the first half and the second half, I think that's comfort level, Vince. I don't really know where else to look at it, because it's a really bizarre trend, because you can say it's like halftime adjustments and teams like looking to kind of neutralize him a bit in those halves, but I didn't particularly see that. And I think the evidence of that the most in terms of when we've seen him get the most comfortable is that I don't really think that he's looking to score that much in his first shift out there. Mm-hmm. But whenever he's out there with the second unit and he comes back into the game for the second time, he's a completely different player and just looks to really attack off the dribble and score. And I think that's just a matter of him finding his comfort level in each phase of the game. And I think it's gone from the second quarter to now the first half. This sounds like a really grinding and slow process, but I think that's just what it's going to be with him.
Yeah, I think you're right. Now, I want to hyper-focus on a couple of those elements. Number one, the clutch time performance of this basketball team, or lack thereof. What do you think the solution is for a basketball team that's got a guy like Devin Booker, proven closer in the past, and a guy like Chris Paul, who, even though his shooting percentage, and he's not one of the greatest shooters in the league, he tends to rise up to the moment. What is the solution to getting some order and some better results out of these situations?
It's time, and that's a answer I think that everyone wants to hear a quick fix, I think, but I just don't think it's going to be a quick fix. A really good stat that you can look at is last year, the Oklahoma City Thunder started the year 5-10, and a lot of their losses were by single digits in close games. 8 of those 10 losses were in games that had crunch time minutes, and if you'll remember, during the offseason, we were talking about that Chris Paul was far and away the best clutch player in the NBA. In those clutch time minutes, he was amazing and won the Oklahoma City Thunder a ton of games. It wasn't in those first 15 games. The Thunder had a plus minus of 0 in crunch time minutes during those 15 games. Mm. But for the remaining 57, when they almost won 40 of those 57 games, they were plus 103 in crunch time minutes, and then the next closest team, I believe, was the Raptors at about 57. So they almost doubled the team that came in second in terms of how dominant they were in crunch time, and that's Chris Paul. And you can see that there was a jump in his numbers after the first 15 to 20 games of the season with the Thunder. I think we're going to see that again this year. Perhaps we should have expected it a little bit more and not been as surprised that he was going to get off to a slow start, especially with the slow ramp up. But I think that the one thing that they need to figure out now, because it's not just about Chris Paul getting comfortable, it's about him and Book building chemistry and not just having a your-turn, my-turn sort of relationship in crunch time, because while they're two players who can get it done on their own right, individually it works much better when they're doing it together and when they're running sets together. And Monty kind of he had this really basic answer, but that's kind of the stage they're at right now, where in terms of what he wants to see more in crunch time when those two are out together. And he just said, well, we need to like start running plays and figuring out ways to use those two, plus DeAndre as well. Because the thing about DeAndre's recent play is, if he's playing aggressive the way he was on Friday and Saturday, I'm not usually the person that's saying he should be getting the ball in the post with 4 minutes left in a two-point game, but if he's playing the way he did in those two games, he should at least once or twice. So they need to figure out this dynamic together, and they will over time. I don't think this is just going to be a process that might take 30 games instead of 20. And I know, again, that's not really an answer people want to hear, but that's going to be the growing pains with the team. And we're seeing it across the league right now. One of the teams that's struggling in crunch time more than them is the Boston Celtics, which is not a team you think of that lacks execution with Brad Stevens and the amount of players that they've brought back. But teams are just working through some growing pains right now across the board, even when they're not really changing that much. It's just a strange dynamic that the season has presented. We've talked about on the show before the strange amount of blowouts and odd results we've seen across the league. I just think it's a strange dynamic of this season that we kind of have to get used to.
One of the cool things about Jay Crowder, came to the Suns and he was very open about why he shot so well, why he played so well, why his percentages from three-point territory were so good last year. And he basically said Eric Spoelstra and that staff empowered him, just told him, just continue shooting. It's all good. You missed. Don't worry about it. Don't look at us. You're not coming out. It's all good. There are times this year where I think the Suns believe they're a better three-point shooting team than they are. And maybe one day down the road, they will be that team. But how would you balance that? How would you balance the amount of three-point field goals taken by this team when their percentages don't warrant that kind of team-wide participation from beyond the arc?
I think it comes down to personnel, and Jay's a really interesting guy to bring up, because I think when you've got Devin Booker attacking the defense and he kicks it to the corner and Jay Crowder's wide open, I know the Crowder shooting percentages are down this year. I think they're around like 32-33% right now, and you want him more around 36-38%, especially the amount of open threes that he's taking. I think that's a shot you'll take. Now something that's interesting that comes up is that when you look at those crunch time numbers again and the differential, the Suns are only shooting 26% from three-point range right now in the fourth quarter, which is just really interesting that there's a random drop-off there, because I think that's when they're creating the most open shots. Crowder is one of those guys who's just shooting a really poor mark from there right now, and I think that's going to come over time, and I know that's been my answer for a couple of these questions, but I just truly believe that it's going to be something that gets better over the next couple of weeks. But that's sort of been a fascinating discussion around the trend the league has gone in the past 5 to 10 years, is you're taking that shot. It's been the debate with LeBron in the past 10 to 15 years. You know, when he had those crunch time possessions and we would talk about how he kicked it to Kyle Korver in the corner, and there were some people who would argue that Kyle Korver wide open in the corner should not take the game deciding shot and it should be LeBron even if he has three guys
exactly
on him. I think that's sort of the debate there, is that do you want to trust the eighth, ninth man on the team who is out there to hit that shot, as opposed to where the focus of the defense is? I think, Dan, the interesting discussion point there is you've got Chris Paul, Devin Booker, and DeAndre Ayton in those moments. You should find a way to have one of those three guys decide more often than not what happens in those moments, as opposed to guys like Cam Johnson, like Mikal Bridges, and like Jay Crowder. That's part of the balancing act, and a really good point that you bring up, too.
Kellen Olson, our guest here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Before we let you go, and kind of on that same subject of three-point shooting, there's been some recent changes in the rotation, and Langston Galloway, who was really a spark plug off the bench, instant offense, and for the year is hitting 48% of his threes, has fallen out of the rotation. Does that make perfect sense to you when you consider the three-point struggles this team has had in recent losses, Kellen?
I think it has for the certain matchups that they've had. They're in a really tough spot right now. Obviously, Book was missing Saturday's game. Mm-hmm. Cam Johnson left Saturday's game with cramps. They were really down a couple of bodies. And Monty Williams decided to turn to Abdul Nader, who played 30 minutes. And Nader was the better matchup out there against Denver, because they play such a strong closing five that includes Michael Porter Jr., that you need as much defense out there as you can get. And that's where you look at someone like Langston Galloway and wonder if he can survive out there. Now, the obvious counter there is, well, what about Javon Carter? He plays defense. The problem with Javon is that he's just undersized. And when you play him with another point guard, he would have been out there with Chris Paul. one of those two guys now needs to guard someone who that they're not properly, they don't have the right size matchup for, and, and you're in trouble there. So I think that's a lesson that we're kind of learning with this team, is that even though they've got depth and they've got capable NBA players towards the end of the bench, something that they have not had in the past couple of years, you're still looking at guys that you do not really want to trust more than 10, more than 15 minutes. I also think, Vince, they're looking for as much athleticism on the court as they can get right now. I do believe that the change with Cam Johnson, the starting lineup, had to do with playing faster and getting them out of that bottom of the league when it comes to pace. And I think that someone like Nader playing as well helps them with that. He's a great athlete and someone who I think is only going to get more comfortable with time and not a bad shooter in his own right. Yeah. I think someone who Suns fans are going to come around on. I don't think he got a fair end of the stick in terms of making a good first impression on Saturday.
Yeah, and I didn't mind what I saw, but I mean, Galloway came in so many different times, but your explanation makes perfect sense from the defensive side of the ball. So, Kellen, thanks for the time. As always, we appreciate it. And yes, you can check out Kellen's piece. It's featured on ArizonaSports.com right now. Why the Suns' recent losing skid shouldn't set off alarms. KO, great stuff, man.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Kellen Olson, our guest on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Coulter Infinity Luxury Cars, legendary service. Visit CoulterInfinity.com.
Bickley and Morata. Hash marks.
I haven't really even thought about that at all. I've been so focused on trying to do my job for the Bills, and obviously I'm not stressing about it. I'm just, like I said, trying to be the best quarterback for this team, and we'll cross that bridge when we get there, I guess.
Josh Allen of the recently ousted Buffalo Bills asked the question upon exit interviews, what about that new contract that's looming? He certainly took a huge step in that direction to be one of the next really highly paid quarterbacks in the league. And knowing what we know about Josh Allen, that's about the answer you would expect. You know, the wounds are fresh. The pain is fresh of losing in the AFC Championship game. Not really the right time to think about a contract, but it's coming. And while we did say yesterday, Bick, that he missed an opportunity to join the elite of the elite quarterbacks in the league, no small feat. I mean, Patrick Mahomes is 25-1 as the starting quarterback in his last 26 games. He didn't play horribly. He's still, I mean, you look at the year and the improvement that Josh Allen has made over the course of his career. It's remarkable in a 3-year stretch what he's done.
No, I totally agree. He was one of those guys that when he came out of college, I was definitely a skeptic based on the quality of competition. I knew the kid had a live arm. I knew he was athletic. But history had always taught me to kind of be wary of those guys. And this is... this is not just a better than I expected quarterback. This is also a quarterback that is perfectly fit for Buffalo, New York. And so that's why when he comes out and says, what did I prove this year?
Yeah.
I proved that the Buffalo Bills picked the right guy.
What do you think you proved this year with your overall performance?
I proved that they didn't make a mistake by drafting me going back a few years ago. And I got to continue to go out there and have that same mindset. And I'm just trying to help this team win.
So that to me is very powerful. That I'm sure that's because when, you know, he came in with a class of quarterbacks, and it seems like the last few classes, they all have had these inner debates going on about who deserves what and who is what. That's a powerful thing for him to realize, but I think it's true. I think there's a lot of erratic and wildness in him, but I think in Buffalo it's very celebrated, and his, once again, his personality and his leadership, Gene, when he gets the other stuff together, he's going to be unstoppable like that.
Yeah, it was an interesting answer, and even 3 years later now, when you look back at that 2018 quarterback class, those five first-round picks that were quarterbacks, it is this never, the shifting of the thought process on each of these guys never seems to end.
Right.
You can make a strong argument that because one of those five guys in that class has won an MVP, and that's Lamar Jackson. But you can argue right now going into 2021 that Josh Allen is the most complete quarterback of that group. It may change again. I mean, Baker Mayfield certainly improved his stock this year. Good year for Baker Mayfield. There's questions about him because I think much like Josh Allen, those questions have to do about decision-making, putting the ball in jeopardy. That's something that needs to be worked on by both. Still a ton of questions about Sam Darnold, on whether or not he can stay healthy, about his performance, whether or not he's going to be in New York. Josh Allen was probably in real time, going back to that draft night. Mm-hmm. That was the one that people pointed at number seven and said, I don't know if I understand this pick because a lot of the things that you said, again, remarkable ascension. And then you have Josh Rosen in that mix, who's not even a factor anymore.
He has answered all the questions. Just not there's no more questions about him.
There's no more
questions. It is funny, though. Uh-huh. In real time, if you looked at the five quarterbacks in the first round of that draft, and you said, who is most likely to be a bust? You'd probably say
Josh Allen.
You'd probably say Josh Allen. Then you'd say Lamar Jackson. Then you'd say Baker Mayfield.
Yeah,
and those were the three best ones.
Who do you think was the safest pick out of any of them?
Darnold and Rosen.
Ready? Yes, the two guys from the Southern California schools.
That is funny, or not?
Yeah, not.
Or not?
Yeah. It was less funny a few years ago. A little more funny now.
Speaking of future contracts, those are the reports coming out of Green Bay now that Aaron Rodgers is plotting. He wants a new contract from the
Don't
Green
know
Bay
if
Packers.
I buy that. I saw that report. Was it Mike Florio who speculated that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that obviously could be what his motivation is here. Compensate me better, but that doesn't compensate me better. Doesn't validate whatever he feels is going wrong in the Green Bay Packers. If he thinks that he's got an organization that won't invest in helping him win, paying him more money doesn't change that. In fact, it probably only makes the situation worse because you're taking up more of the money yourself. See what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's true because our guy, Mike Wilbon, yesterday he went on a radio show and flat out said Aaron Rodgers is done in Green Bay.
Really?
Now, Mike doesn't break a lot of news, but he's got a lot of good sources.
Yeah, here was Adam Schefter from ESPN yesterday on the future of Aaron Rodgers.
And if Aaron Rodgers wants to go play somewhere else in the state of California or wherever it is, he has the power to do that.
Right.
It would take a huge set of cojones to do that. It would take a lot of courage. It would upset a lot of people and rub them the wrong way. But if that's what he wants to do, that's what he's entitled to do.
That was part of Get Up, and they had a big panel. Adam Schefter and Dan Orlovsky famously going at it with Pat McAfee chiming in on the side. Orlovsky was asked, will Rodgers be with the Packers next year?
I think he's obviously disappointed. We've seen a little bit of a different version of Aaron this year as well. Like super deep thought, very open with his communication. But I think the two questions coming out of it are, where does Aaron, I mean, Aaron is the MVP of the league, 48-5 this year. Where does he think that he can go and it be an upgrade situation-wise? You know, like really good coaching, best offensive line in football, really good backs. And then on the flip side, if you're Green Bay, you're going to let the MVP of the NFL walk out? You know, like I don't think that either of them are looking at the situation and finding a better one. So I think it's an obviously post-game emotional moment. But I don't see any chance where Aaron Rodgers is not in Green Bay next year.
See, I'm not that far. I think it's very possible. I'm more on the Adam Schefter side of things, that he can engineer this if he wants. And you know, let's look at one of the quarterbacks still standing. Tom Brady, after 20 years in New England, moved to what he thought were greener pastures, and they've been greener. Aaron Rodgers might have that same type of experience after all those years in Green Bay to go somewhere. For whatever reason, Green Bay hasn't been able to get over the hump on a consistent basis with him there. Who's to say he's not the final piece of a championship puzzle somewhere else?
So Adam Schefter said it would take a lot of cojones to do that. More to the point, it would take somebody who would not care being the object of derision for years and years and years to come in Green Bay, Wisconsin. And I think Aaron Rodgers is built perfectly for that. I don't think he cares what people say or think about him. So I think he's perfectly psychologically suited to do something like this.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of it, there seems to me to be some national analysts who have not been paying attention to the NBA, who don't know how this is done.
Yeah.
You heard a little bit from Bill Barnwell during our interview yesterday. You heard it with Dan Orlovsky there. Well, the Packers aren't going to let him go anywhere.
Yeah.
That's old school guy who hasn't been paying attention to the NBA.
And the subject of player empowerment.
Right.
And how it's bleeding over to other
That's
sports.
Right.
Yeah. Maybe we could circle back around to that. It's a fascinating topic. But now, you talk about fascinating topics. Facial hair is on the forefront next. Mustache, not a mustache. Straight ahead, it's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Time to take a look at the Arizona Sports Poll Question. Brought to you by Sanderson Ford. The best play is at Sanderson Ford.
Today's Sanderson Ford Poll Question on the homepage at ArizonaSports.com reads, who will have had the better NFL career when it's all said and done? Tom Brady, Patrick Mahomes? I like this question. I kind of hinted at it yesterday. Tom Brady is undoubtedly the greatest quarterback that has ever lived.
Yeah.
But I said yesterday, it's only a placeholder spot for him.
Okay, I am going to say that Patrick Mahomes will have the better-looking career, but Tom Brady will be more accomplished because Patrick Mahomes is not going to play to age 44, 45.
Maybe he will. Imagine the advances. What if he discovers his own personal avocado ice cream?
Yeah, maybe. Right?
So you're voting for Mahomes? Wow, Brady.
I don't know.
Brady's got 82% of the vote.
I think I'm voting for Brady is what I'm voting for.
All right. I'm voting for Mahomes.
Okay.
I'm in the 18%. I just think he's ridiculous. He's at a different level, even than Tom Brady. That's today's Sanderson Ford poll question. You could vote on it right now on the homepage at ArizonaSports.com.
Mustache. Not a mustache.
A mustache, a mustache, a mustache. Big mustache, thick mustache. My mustache, your mustache. Say the word mustache. A mustache, a mustache. Now we both have said mustache. A mustache, a mustache. If you only got a mustache.
That's your mom, and she's got a mustache.
All right, it's that time of week for America's fastest-growing facial hair-related quiz sensation, Mustache!
Not a mustache!
Mustache! Not a mustache! Fantastic. Here's how it's going to work. I'm going to play a soundbite of an interview, a movie clip, a song, and you'll tell me whether the person talking or singing has a mustache or does not have a mustache. And then you can get another point if you correctly identify the person. First one to 10 points wins, or if there's a tie, or if there's a run out of blah, 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 blah. Anyway.
Extend the game for no particular reason.
Right. Yeah, we'll see. But here's the first question, and we like to start with a little musical questions on this show. Vince will go first this week.
Okay.
What do you mean? He's gone first the last 2 weeks.
Dan? Dan, I'm very happy. I'm very happy to have you go first this week. Dan, here's your first clue.
Working on mysteries without any clues. Working on a night moves. Trying to make some front page driving news. Working on a night moves.
That would be Bob Seger. Jarrett, and I think at that point in time there was definitely a mustache.
That's right. The famously mustachio, bearded, goateed Bob Seger. 2 points for you.
Working on some night moves.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right, Vinny.
That is Brandon Flowers of the Killers.
Wow.
I know there's been a mustache at certain points, but that was early on. I'm going to say no mustache.
Wow.
That was very well
played. That's a lot of knowledge on the Killers.
I would have just accepted the Killers. Yeah, that was very well done. All right.
I don't know what I think of that band. I really don't. I don't know what I think of that singer.
That song is catchy.
I agree.
I like that song.
Yeah.
I should like that band, but I don't like a lot of their songs.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I for some reason.
All right. Dan?
Hey, Carl. Up your nose with rubber hose. Hey, Carl, you are so low. You are so low that you could play handball up against the curb.
That's Vinny Barbarino, John Travolta, not a mustache.
That is correct. All right. 2 points.
Vic's on his game today. Four to two.
All right, Vinny?
Yeah.
New York's hottest Irish club is off the church, mother! Located in the clogged heart of the Bronx at the corner of 3000th Street and Gary Marshall Memorial Drive.
this gang-ridden skateboard park was the ceremony spot for Vern Troyer's 2004 wedding.
I will never not laugh at that bit. That is Bill Hader as Stefan, not a mustache.
That is correct.
Weren't you just doing him yesterday?
Yeah.
I didn't have anything ready to go. I wanted to unleash it, but I didn't have the material ready.
All right. Dan?
All right.
The time I remember oh so well. The night they go Dixie down. When all the bells are ringing. The night they go Dixie down.
Oh, I don't have a clue on this one, Jarrett.
Wow. I would be totally guessing, too, on this one.
I don't have a clue. I'll guess yes on the mustache.
Okay, you got yes on the mustache. That is the band, Levon Helm singing. I think that clip was specifically from the Martin Scorsese documentary about them. Wow. But all right. Not a fan of the band?
I've never heard that before in my life.
You never heard that song?
Neither have I.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
The Weight is one of their big hits.
Oh, I know that song. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
That's all right.
All right. It's
okay.
How you doing?
Okay.
All right. Vinny?
Mm-hmm. With a little love and some tenderness, we'll walk upon the water, we'll rise above the mist, with a little peace and some harmony.
I'm not sure. I think I need a longer clip.
Yeah, okay. Not quite sure who that could be.
Darius Rucker, Hootie and the Blowfish mustache.
That is correct.
Darius Rucker. The dolphins make me cry. Shut up, you snowflake.
Wow, is that a long-awaited... take that!
The dolphin made me cry.
I always thought that lyric was just preposterous. I'm sorry.
It is bad.
Well, it's
it
really preceded is. By, you think I'm a baby because the dolphins make me cry, so I think it's, the football team. He's a big football fan. All right. Okay, here we go.
Five for Bick, six for me.
Yes, all right.
I inherited $1 million. What did he say? Don't hate me because I'm lucky. I'm like,
Well, there's a song that there's a quote from a Bob Dylan song in that song.
Oh, there
I think
is.
That part of it is.
Okay.
Said I shot a man in gray and took him off to Italy. Inherited $1 million and when she died.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
Right. That's from a Bob Dylan song. All right. Ready?
It is?
Yes. I believe it is from. I have to look up. Okay. All right, here we go.
I'm embarrassed at your level of Hootie
knowledge.
So
I was all in on Hootie. All right.
It says a lot.
For 6 months, I couldn't sleep. I couldn't sleep. I couldn't sleep. With insomnia, nothing's real. Everything's far away. Everything's a copy of a copy of a copy. When deep space exploration ramps up, it'll be the corporations that name everything. The IBM Stellar Sphere, the Microsoft Galaxy, Planet Starbucks.
Ooh, another blank. I have no idea, but this time I'm going to guess not a mustache.
That is correct.
That is correct.
That's Ed Norton.
I should have guessed that. That's who it sounded like to me.
Yep.
I should have guessed it.
You got to go the Vinny route sometimes. Just go with your...
Lesson to me, that was the voice I heard, and I'm like... He's not been in any astronaut movies.
No, that was the beginning of Fight Club when he has insomnia and he's doing... All right, Vinny?
Yep.
The golf swing. First, step up. Plant your feet firmly on the ground and address the ball.
What do they mean by address the ball?
How should I know? That's what it says here. Oh, that's all it says, address the ball. Wait a minute. I think I know what it means there. Step up. Plant your feet firmly. Hello, boy.
Oof. Remember, you're going second.
What does that mean? I'm forfeiting. I'm not taking the points. That's such a lame... You can't do that, Jared.
What?
You said, remember, you're going second, meaning that it's connected to the first clue. Now I know who it is, and I'm not taking the points.
Wow.
It's 6-6.
Okay.
Just be quiet and host the show.
Well, I was trying to help you because we're running low on time here.
Because you play 86-second clips of everything.
That is my fault. I will give you that.
Wow. First one to 8 wins. Go ahead.
All right, Dan. I stopped an old man along the way, hoping to find some old
forgotten words or ancient melody. You reached peak absurdity, Jared, because that was a clue for me the last game we played. That would be Toto Africa, not a mustache.
No, he does have a mustache.
Okay.
Sorry about that. Vinny.
Yeah.
You ready, Vince?
Doesn't matter.
I thought I didn't remember playing that. All right,
you
here
did.
We go.
For those at you home, did. Vince you was did. Just fully reclined, laid out, laughing into the sky. I just feel like we all need to know that. My bum is on the rail. Bum is on the rail. Look at me. My bum is on the rail. My bum is on the man.
Bum is on the man. It's a lot of fun to put your bum on a man. Tom Green mustache.
That is correct.
Nicely done.
See? Another flawless edition.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Of mustache. Not a mustache.
Not a mustache.
A mustache. Yes! You didn't even want to give what the answer was on that one that you refused to answer?
It was Art Carney as Ed Norton.
That's right.
Yeah. But I didn't know it until you said what you said.
All I said was, remember you're going second. I wanted to make sure you knew it was your turn.
Yeah, like my clues weren't hard enough. You had to give him hints, Jared.
Well, all I know
the
is
band
that.
Band against Hootie.
I begged you to go second, Dan. Begged you to go second, and you got insulted, and we had to switch the order. That could have been you.
We'll try to recover next. It's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station. Bickley and Murata.
Bickley and Murata.
And Arizona, for the first time in 3 years, is going to sweep Arizona State in the 2020-2021 season.
It was a season full of promise, full of optimism. And then it happened.
Yeah, the season began.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, that was Tim Healy, voice of the Sun Devils, on the call last night. The final call of a 13-point win by Arizona over Arizona State. Sun Devils dropped to 1-5. They've lost 6 straight games. The last time they won a game was all the way back on December 13th against Grand Canyon. I mean, I hate to sound dramatic about it. I'm not even going to go there.
What?
I was going to say maybe the highlight of this season for anybody who's really invested in ASU basketball was the 3-week shutdown where you didn't have to worry about this team.
Yeah, well, okay.
Following up a game against your arch rival where you lost in such painful fashion at the buzzer on an air ball follow-up, I mean, that's a tough way to lose a ball game. And to follow it up with a start that flat, I said this to you in show prep, Bick. You know, there was a time when this season started and ASU got off to the lackluster start. And the question was, is ASU's streak of making the NCAA tournament in 3 consecutive years, is that in jeopardy? I don't even think that's the biggest question now. I think there's bigger questions about the guidance of this program under Bobby Hurley.
I think there are going to be bigger questions being asked. Whether or not they're legitimate, I do think that what has happened with this is going to turn some people on Bobby Hurley. Now, I'm of the belief that, okay, you know what? The recruiting has seemingly gone in the right direction, but Vinny, you said something earlier that is so true. We need to, in both football and basketball at ASU, bridge this gap between, we're recruiting so much better than we ever had, and actually, you know, winning games. Because the recruiting, it's like having the great farm system that you never see.
Mm-hmm.
It's the old Mike Hazen thing. I don't want to hear about that anymore. Show me a winning baseball team. Same with recruiting. Don't tell me how much better Bobby Hurley, Herm Edwards, and Antonio Pierce are doing. Show me a winning football team. Same with this basketball team. So I'm there with you there, and I think a lot of people are going to go, how in the world could you post this kind of record with this kind of talent? What in the world is going on with this basketball team that you as the head coach cannot get your hands around, given the fact that, I don't know, you recruited these guys? I don't know what it is, Vinny, but it doesn't seem to me like this team is all that interested in digging out of this hole. They didn't seem all that interested in playing basketball with any kind of fire, even though your head coach went and completely covered for you after the previous loss to Arizona.
You would have thought they felt like they got screwed in that last game, and they were going to come out and they were going to show the Wildcats that they deserve to win and they're better than them.
Instead, Bobby Hurley chose to make the postgame media availability after the first loss to Arizona all about one call the officials did not make and pinning all the blame on officiating and none on the players. He ended up covering for a basketball team that paid him back like that. And not only that, he motivated Arizona, because if you're the Wildcats, you hear that kind of stuff, and then you see that billboard on the way out of town, you're probably thinking, okay, you know what? Let's run it back on these guys the same way but harder. And then that's how you get 10 to nothing. And that's how you get 26 to 6. It's embarrassing, man.
Arizona,
it's embarrassing.
They might have lost their best player at the moment to an ankle injury right before halftime, too. And it didn't affect them. There's just, you talk about fit of teams and the guard you. And this came up on the broadcast last night with Dave Pasch and Bill Walton. The guard you moniker, which I think is kind of taking a 180-degree turn on ASU, because when that was coined, that was in the days of Shannon Evans and Cody Justice and Trey Holder, and Remy Martin was a freshman on that team, and those guards wreaked havoc on other teams, and it was a hard adjustment for teams to make, and so they ran with it. But it almost seems like now, because of Guard U, the birth of Guard U, they've just kind of turn their nose up at size. And I know Romello White transferring after last year and going to Ole Miss, that was a big loss, but you can't overcome that loss. They don't have. So I actually think Jalen Graham played really well last night. He was one of the bright spots, but with the amount of guards and wings that they have on this team, the lack of ball movement is startling. Remy Martin played well for about a 12-minute stretch last night, and that was one of the highlights, but he hasn't been the same player this year. Alonzo Verge is just a strange fit on a basketball team.
Oh, yes, you can say that again. So I think that this is, what I think this is this might be a little bit of everything. This might be a proof that Bobby Hurley is recruiting better, because you're bringing in guys who are only going to be one and dones, and they're going to be gone. And if things don't get off to a good start, or if they're not vibing with their teammates, then you know what? It's just going to be a wasted year, and maybe there's a lesson to be learned here, and I'm going to give Vinny credit again because he's right about this. If you're going to create a one-and-done culture like they've done for years at Kentucky, like they're beginning to do at Duke, you've got to have the right system in place, and even that doesn't work. Look at Duke's year this year.
They're struggling.
So, but you've got to have an infrastructure so when you get the wrong mix of one-and-dones, the bottom doesn't fall out of the tub entirely, and that's what's happened to ASU. You don't even know what you're going to get. And whether or not this is purely happenstance, but when I talk about a bad night for ASU basketball, you think about the expectations of this team, and then you think about the forces of a marginalized, diminished media, which is true in every city in America, horrible weather, and a pandemic. There was one media person from Phoenix who was in Tucson for that game last night. That's quite a commentary.
And young
it's
for Jesse.
Young Jesse Morrison. There's a lot of reasons for that, but it still is what it still is. And that's what that is. So I look at this thing, and then I don't know, man. You kind of had a bad feeling about these two games being stacked up against each other early on, and, man, did that turn out to be prescient.
Yeah, and they don't have a lot of time to turn around now, because they got two more home games against Cal and Stanford this weekend. But I think it's safe to say the program hasn't. This year's team, this is rock bottom right now. Mm-hmm. You would agree, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what's the old saying? Well, before you can turn things around, you got to hit rock bottom. There's only one way to go but up right now. and they have a game against a beatable team in Cal, a team that they have beaten up in Berkeley already. But, you know, they've struggled against everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what happened to this team's confidence. They were a confident basketball team at one point. It's tough to watch.
Let me give you a little experience of being a U of A football fan. Sometimes when you think you hit rock bottom, you don't notice that the program is also holding a shovel.
Yeah, well, yeah.
And can go deeper.
But the difference, and if you want to hold up what's happening to ASU basketball right now to what U of A football was in 2020, there were zero expectations for Arizona. In mm-hmm. fact, when they were going to play a 10-game schedule, several experts in college football picked them to go 0-10. They were going to stink out loud, and they did. They did what they were expected to do. ASU was picked to finish second in the Pac-12.
Well, I thought I heard people saying that this could have been the most talented U of A ASU basketball team ever, just purely talent.
I think going back to the early 80s when they had Byron Scott, Nolt Lister, Fat Lever, Paul Williams, Sam Williams.
I know, I've got nothing for you. You've named
Johnny Nash.
You've named all the big players on the team from my perspective. Bill Frater.
I loved that team.
Yeah.
But yeah, you'd have to go back about that far, like 40 some odd years.
Bobby Hurley now is 3-9 against Arizona, and that's something you don't want to be. You know what was really good, contextually speaking? Herb Sendek. He was 9-10. Just about 500 against the Wildcats.
At a 5-0 stretch with James Harden, though.
Is good old Herb still at Santa Clara?
That wasn't fair, because ASU had a good player, so those games didn't count. They had a really good player, and he went 5-0 against
right,
U of A.
Right.
Well, against,
that's the asterisk.
I wouldn't even say it was U of A. It was during the Kevin O'Neill.
Yeah, that's the double asterisk, sorry.
Double asterisk.
Russ Pennell.
Russ Pennell, yeah.
Russ Pennell.
K.O. And yes, he is still with Santa Clara.
Is he?
I got to interview him when he was hired for that job.
How
I was covering the league back then.
How's Santa Clara doing this year?
Good question. I don't even know.
Hey there, Sarah. How are you?
I remember once I went and I met Herb Sendek for breakfast to kind of interview him in a casual setting.
Mm-hmm.
So we met at a restaurant and he ordered something like plain toast. And I'm like, dude, come on. He's like, no, I'm as boring as I look.
Are you serious? Did he really say that?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, self-awareness.
Did that end up in the column?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
That's right up your alley.
Definitely.
Santa Clara, 9-4, 3-2 in the West Coast Conference under Herb Sendek.
There we go. That's a step up. Santa Clara used to be terrible.
I hope they can turn it around to some degree. The Broncos.
The Broncos.
Yeah,
that's who it is.
Broncos.
Right.
Coming up next, we're going to play another round of Mustache Not a...
Let me get the Toto ready.
Yeah. You bless the rains down in Africa. The Bickley Blast is up next. It's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.